Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.
I'm super excited for the conversation because just the conversation on LinkedIn, right? And then the line, I'm going to read verbatim. If you'd ever like to have a chat with a world-traveling bartender who became a personal freedom coach serving the hospitality industry, I'm sure it'd be a fun conversation.
So how I fell into food?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I mean, I spent my whole, I think, you know, my first job was bussing tables, and I've done everything kind of front of the house. I've bussed tables. I was a waiter for years growing up. In college, I was a host at an expo at a restaurant. And then I kind of went to the other side of hospitality. I worked for an airline for 10 years, my whole 20s. I was on the corporate side of hospitality, and left that to travel the world. And that's when I knew that I needed a skill to kind of take with me and make money. And I had a friend who had two dive bars in Manhattan. And I said, Kyle, I need to learn how to bartend. He says, all right, come into, it was one of his places. He says, come in on Monday and you'll have Mondays. I'm like, no, I don't know how to bartend. He goes, nah, you'll be fine. You'll figure it out. And of course I did. It was a dive bar, so it was opening beers and pouring shots. It wasn't too complicated, but that led into an 8-year bartending career that spanned from Manhattan to St. John in the Virgin Islands, Australia, New Zealand.
Holy cow.
Breckenridge, Colorado. So yeah, I've bartended in a lot of places in the world and met some amazing people and learned a lot about myself. And that
did you do the whole with bartending thing? Did you like do the whole like start to get like fancier and doing like the funky pours and like the flipping stuff? I think there's a name for it, but I don't, I see it.
Flair.
Flair. There we go. I couldn't think of it.
I wanted to. And the place I worked in Breckenridge was my last spot. There was some Louis Trey in the back and it was a real tight bar. I wasn't about to be, you know, tossing bottles. It wasn't that kind of place, but it was like, I always thought that would have been cool, but I never got into flair bartending, but I was a great bartender. I mean, great, like really good martinis, old fashions, you know, traditional kind of cocktails. I can crush them.
Give me a good old fashioned any day. Why did you then decide to like bounce around, right, from place to place? Like you said, you were down in Australia. Like, what led to that decision for you? Like, you know what? Let's just go to Australia.
So I think it was my time in corporate where, you know, I worked in corporate for 10 years and I always kind of say like the last 5 of those years, I knew I was ready for a change, but it took a long time for that to happen. And then when my wife actually kind of suggested we quit our jobs and move to the Caribbean, I was all for it. And then I bartended for like 8 years. And I'd say like 4 of those years, I kind of felt like I had moved on. I was ready for something else. Mm-hmm. And then I actually started a business in hospitality that was kind of event planning and just kind of promoting events in my town. And that was amazing for 6 months. And then like I spent another 6 months there. So I kind of like kept shrinking the time that I was in all these roles where it didn't feel right. But for the traveling aspect, I just knew that I wanted to travel the world and I wanted to see the world and experience different cultures. And I kind of found it fascinating that I had to quit my airline job to travel the world. And that's exactly what happened. So it was just a plan that my wife and I had. We got to Australia right when I was turning 30, which was kind of the end of the work holiday visa. So we stayed for a full year and that was like really took advantage of that. And then we just said, okay, where to next? And it was New Zealand and then Indonesia and, you know, lots of different stops. Breckenridge, Colorado was supposed to be one ski season. And 8 years later, it was home.
So is that where home is now, is Breckenridge?
No, I actually live in Costa Rica.
Oh, so now you're in Costa Rica. I mean, why not? I mean, that's just par for the course. I'm sure it's a nice, a lot nicer weather than it is here in Chicago right now.
I would imagine so. That's why I moved here from the snowy Rocky Mountains. It was just, I loved it in terms of like how beautiful the mountains were. And I'm a big skier, but 8 winters that are 8 months long kind of wears on you. And I don't like being cold. As much as I love skiing, I was just ready to be warm. So Costa Rica's been, we've been living here about 4 years, and I've been here full time for about 2.
Wow. Wow, that is so cool. Now, did that happen because of what you've done? You know, so you've went like bartender to like personal, you know, freedom coach, as you put it. Like, I'm assuming that gave you the flexibility to kind of be able to go wherever and be wherever.
Yeah, exactly. And that was always my dream. And, you know, I think a lot of people misinterpret personal freedom coach to mean like the freedom to do whatever you want and live wherever you want and do whatever you want for work. And that's a component of it. But for me, I think a big part of my story that I'd love to share is that, you know, freedom is the freedom from the negative thoughts in our head. Freedom is freedom from the programming that keeps us stuck, caring about what other people think, staying stuck in comparisons, staying stuck in complacency. For me, I loved, like I said, I loved bartending for like 4 years, but there was another 4 years after that where it was like, my soul had kind of moved on, but my body was stuck in the same place. And I took to a lot of kind of self-medication, coping mechanisms. You're working behind a bar. There's a bottle of Jameson always at the ready, kind of just numbing those emotions. And for me, it made me realize that, you know, skiing 100 days a year, living in a beautiful place, traveling the world, quitting my corporate job, none of that led to sustained happiness. And that's one of my biggest messages when I work with corporate leaders and I work with leaders in the food service industry as well, is that you think, or you might think, that the next job or, you know, just quitting in general, a lot of people I talk to, I just need a break. I want to quit. And it's like, that's not going to solve the problem. It might be fun for a few months or even a few years, but that's not where joy lies. And so coming to Costa Rica was, definitely intentional for the warm weather and slower lifestyle, and just kind of makes it easier to be mindful and peaceful and present. But I wasn't using it to kind of escape anything. I had already tried that game and it didn't work. So I knew in Colorado, I had to kind of go inward and find out who I really was and what my deeper purpose was in life. And that kind of led to coaching, not by taking a certification course or even thinking I wanted to be a coach, by turning my life around and going from a really depressed asshole to someone who was so joyful and loving life that people just started asking me, like, what are you doing? And I said, well, if you really want to know, I'd be happy to tell you. And we would meet for coffee. It was supposed to be a half hour chat. And 2 hours later, you know, they would leave feeling amazing. I would leave feeling amazing. And I just said, like, what's going on here? Why does this feel so good to just talk about discovering meditation and practicing gratitude and spending more time in nature? Like, these things that aren't hard, but they completely transformed my life. So that's when I just realized, I'm like, oh, this is actually a thing. And let me start to really help people and serve people in the deepest way that I possibly can.
How did you come to that realization that no matter, I mean, you had the life experiences by moving around doing a lot of different things, but a lot of people in our industry don't necessarily, some get that luxury and others don't, right? They kind of fall into the corporate ladder, and maybe they climb up with one company and make a couple moves here, there, whatever it might be. But how did you take what was happening in your life and then just say, you know, enough is enough. I truly want to be happy, and that what I'm doing isn't the happiest, because I've seen it around me. It's happened to me too. Like, what you're saying is like full blown resonating with my body and my soul right now. It's kind of creepy, because I've always thought, okay, I'm going to go chase this position. And then you get there, and like you said, you have a burst of joy for whatever, 3 months. And then you're in the same grind you were in at the last thing. And then your lifestyle creeps up, and it's okay, I need to go on to the next thing. And so you do, and you just keep going, but it just keeps staying the same. So how did you find that moment and that little light bulb actually went off and made you say, there's got to be something else or more fulfilling in this life?
I mean, I I'm glad this is resonating with you. I mean, I think this is the pretty important work and things to talk about. But, you know, the one thing you said was, you know, chasing. And I think a lot of people are, they're chasing success, or they're chasing money, or they're chasing validation, worthiness. That comes from a lot of programming of not feeling worthy or deserving joy. But, you know, then we end up living our lives like donkeys chasing carrots. I mean, really, you know, that's what it is. It's like, we never get to take a bite. It's always just a few feet ahead of us, and it's going to be the next thing. And so I did have that visceral experience, but I would say the straw that broke the camel's back was almost losing my relationship. Like, really, like my wife and I now are married almost 16 years. At that time, like I said, I was a prick. I mean, I was really like, I wasn't present. I wasn't kind. I wasn't compassionate. I wasn't the person I am today. I was a different person, you know, and I really was kind of numbing my emotions. And, you know, we can't just numb the bad emotions. You know, you become this kind of numb person when you're numbing your emotions. And I think that for me, it led me into therapy. And therapy wasn't new for me. I've had issues with depression earlier in my life. And but I did go to this therapist. I said, I don't want medication. I don't want to keep numbing. And that's not to say medication doesn't help people kind of get over a hump. I think it really does. And I'm not a doctor. But for me personally, I just said, I need some help. I don't know what's going on. And she was like, no problem. We're going to talk about this thing called mindfulness. And I was like, well, what is that? I had no idea what it was. And she taught me about being present, which led me to discover meditation. I discovered the Headspace app. I still use it to this day. All of my clients use it. And within a week, I started feeling different. I started feeling better. I started almost like getting a separate like view on my thoughts. Like I wasn't my thoughts. I was looking at my thoughts from a kind of an objective view. So I got to become the sifter of my thoughts. And that led to so much. I mean, it just kept growing from there. I started adding different gratitude practices into my life. I started becoming obsessed with it. Like, really, I started reading books. I started a book club in Breckenridge with a friend of mine. I actually put a post out on Facebook. I'm like, is anyone else into this kind of stuff? And this girl wrote back. She and I become great friends. We started a book club, and every month we were reading a new book on self-development or mindfulness or presence or spirituality. And it just resonated so deeply that I was like, oh, like, it's obvious. It's so obvious that this is what was missing. It wasn't the next job or the next business that I was going to start, or a pile of money, or skiing, or climbing a mountain, or swimming in an ocean. Like, it just wasn't, that wasn't it. That's not where it is. And I loved learning about it and feeling how different I felt when I started practicing some different rituals in my life and looking at things differently. And I think one of the biggest things that I realized, kind of like that straw that broke the camel's back, is that when I would walk into the bar and it was getting really bad, I wouldn't even be able to go to the bar. I'd have to go straight to the bathroom and splash water on my face. And I feel my pulse racing, like kind of like a panic attack. And now I realize that panic attacks, anxiety, depression are all good. They are, you know, it's not about, oh, that's a bad thing, because then you just want to drown it out and you want to take that shot of Jameson or 15. I mean, really, like, I was drinking a lot, you know, and smoking a ton of weed. Like, I was just doing whatever I could to not be there, to get through the shift, to get through the week, to just try to not be in my life, which is a pretty shitty way to go through life. But when you realize, and I think this gives people a lot of peace, is that depression and anxiety are good. It's like, you know, the low fuel alert on your car. It's like you want that alert. You're not going to just kind of cover it up or get upset with it. You're going to say, oh, shit, I need to fuel up. I'm running on fumes. Mm-hmm. But how often do we just burn ourselves out and we don't listen to these warnings? Like, it's our internal system that's saying, dude, something is off. And if you keep ignoring it, it's just going to go from like a little nudge to like a full blown alarm, which is where panic attacks come in and major depression. And at that point, then again, hopefully one day you just wake up to it and say, all right, what's going on here? That is your guidance system working. It's the rumble yeah. strips on the highway. You know, you're driving at midnight and you're kind of nodding off and the car goes over to the edge and it goes, it's like, yeah, that kind of sucks,
mm-hmm.
but it wakes you up and it prevents you from worse things happening. So it's just a matter of when do you take that message, and no one else could know for you. No one knows. And we're so good at hiding it. We're so good at putting a happy face on. We're so good at masking our true emotions. I'm just really glad that I think the world is changing. Even the fact that NAFM had the panel that I was on shows that for, you know, 20,000 people that are at that conference, it was important enough to spend an hour talking about self-care, mental health, practicing mindfulness, and you know, something that I call self-hospitality, which is everyone in this industry is so good at serving, except the one person that mm-hmm. matters. And if you truly want to be of service in a deep way, you have to fill your own cup first. You want to give from that overflow.
It goes back to the airlines, right? When they say, if you're listening, right? Put your air mask on first before you assist others, right? You can't take care of your kids if you yourself can't breathe. Oh my God.
Wisdom in that.
Like, man, like you're hitting home here with some crazy deep stuff. I am loving this. So when I got in the industry, right, I started typical, was in a casino. We'd get off at whatever, 11 o'clock, bars across the street because we couldn't stay there because of, you know, of being a casino. But again, we would drink ourselves to oblivion until 1 and 2 in the morning. And then we would go home, sleep, come back, just rinse and repeat.
Do it again. I'm very familiar with that lifestyle.
How do we, and you may give better clarity and perspective to what you're seeing in the industry, but how do we get younger culinarians or people getting into it that may be going to those type of establishments and that natural environment that hopefully is changing? How do we get them to start seeing that? Is that like having something in some of these culinary schools where there's actual classes that talk about this kind of stuff? Is it, I don't know. Like, how do you get people so that they don't go so far down the rabbit hole that it takes 10 times longer to get out, or have a, oh my God, I can't keep doing this moment, or the moment of you just croak over and die because of stress, anxiety, heart attack?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a good question. And I feel like the tides are turning, you know. It's like a multi-pronged approach. It's panels at conferences. It's bringing in speakers to those conferences or even into the workplace or into those schools. I mean, it'd be amazing if there was a course on self-hospitality, you know, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. Or just self-care. I also think it's deeper than industry specific. It's just this culture of not really thinking for ourselves, you know, just following the herd. And it's like, oh, this is what everyone in the industry does. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what we do. And that's how we bond with each other. I mean, how do we reward people after a busy shift? Shift drink? I mean, really, like, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing. It's a great way to bond. It's a great way to form camaraderie. But there's gotta be more. There's gotta be something mm-hmm. else. Like, let's meet on a sunny day and go for a hike, or let's turn our at least one pre-shift a week into what's going on with your life. You know, we don't need to talk about the menu every day. We could talk about some real stuff, and maybe it's just once a week or maybe it's once a month. But I think at the end of the day, the ultimate responsibility is on the individual. There is no bigger burden in this life than someone who's unhappy and who doesn't enjoy their life. They're the ones who are complaining. They're the ones who are like, hey, only 3 more hours left in the shift. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, I just, at a certain point, I didn't want to be around people that just wanted to get through the shift or get through the week, because I was done with that. I was done kind of just getting through things. I wanted to be present for them, but I had to be the weird one who meditates, the weird one who turns down that drink or says, you know what? It became so easy when I started meditating, because I would wake up hungover and be like, oh no, like this just feels terrible. And then I would cut my drinking back a little because I wanted to wake up and meditate. And then it became this beautiful cycle where the more sensitive to my emotions I got, the better I felt. And it just, I just wanted to keep that going. And once you start feeling really good, you really don't care what other people think, because you don't need that validation. And you know that that path, at least for you, doesn't work. You know, you've tried it. You're like, I'm done with the late nights, rinse and repeats, do it again, this all over again. I mean, I stopped enjoying skiing because I was like, I have 2 hours. I have to make the most of this, because then I got to go into the bar for 8, 9, 10 hours. And then like 2 hours or 3 hours of skiing turned into like forced fun. Like, I have to get as much fun as I can. And if there was a line at the chairlift, or if something happened with my equipment, my God, like, talk about, you know, reactivity and just not being present and losing my mind. It's, again, it just comes back to self-hospitality, but self-responsibility. That's what leadership is. I mean, anyone in the industry who's young and wants to grow as a leader, you learn from people, but you don't have to copy them. You know, take their best attributes. Mm. But at the end of the day, leadership is going first. Leadership is saying, I'm going to do what feels right to me, which you're going to have to be the weird one. You might have to turn down some cocktail hours or late nights, even if that feels like you're missing out on some opportunities. When you show up the next morning feeling great, feeling positive energy, giving from the overflow, that's what's going to help you elevate in the industry and get that next position. But you're going to be enjoying it the whole way along. It's not about needing that next position to feel fulfilled in your life. You're actually going to feel fulfilled and joyful first, which is how it all works.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at in my journey. So I left corporate world back last year and went on this self, all right, what are we going to do, right? I could have easily picked up another corporate job, done whatever. But I was like, you know what? I don't know. I believe in the universe things, right? The all big powers. It was like something just kicked me in the ass and said, you go out there and do what you're supposed to do, and don't do what everyone wants you to do. And so now it's already March, right? And going through this journey of what I've been doing and working with the folks that I'm working, rather than being like always drained. And like, I was that guy. I was like, Jesus, I can't wait till I get this work done. 4 o'clock comes, 5 o'clock comes, I can get the hell out the door. I want to go home. And then, but then to be dreading the next day from the time you leave, not even, you said being present, you know, I got children. So being present for them, because you're checking email, you're trying to turn it off, but you almost, it's like a mechanism that like some of us, you know, I'm a type one personality. Like, we can't turn it off. Like, we want to be busy. Like, we need that validation that we are something, but our validation doesn't come from us. It comes from everyone else saying, great job. You killed that project. You got this done so fast. And it's been really hard personally to take self-gratitude, be like, look at the things you're doing. Stop and say thank you to yourself, that you don't need everyone else to say, wow, that was amazing. You did great. Just accept what you did, take the win, and be like, you know what? I did tear that up, that video, that whatever it is. And so I'm kind of still along that journey. And like you said, I mean, it's not an easy one, because it's, you know, I got a family, so you got to be worried about all the things that come with that. But as I've been along it, like the, like when I go to the studio and we're doing like it, the time just, it's like, wait, shit, I have to go. Like, I need to get home. I still want to record this. I still want to play with that. I'm working on a new recipe for this video. I'm in this whole world of dry aging right now. And so it's like, okay, what else can I do with this? And it's so much more fulfilling than just the, you know, for me, the grind, that 9 to 5 and being filled up. And to your point, you know, things are naturally now kind of catching up, and almost you're like, the universe is rewarding you for just having the patience and kind of taking that leap. Not that that's for everybody, but just kind of, that's where I'm at within my journey.
It's for everybody who wants to be joyful.
I mean,
it is, you have to figure out a way to feel good first, instead of waiting for external validation or something in the future. You really have to flip it 180 and just kind of realize that it's just a shitload of programming that stems from early childhood, and our parents did the best they could, or our caregivers, but it's not like most of them knew about this, about how the universe actually works. Mm-hmm. They were taught by their parents. And you start getting back a few generations, you know, they went through the Great Depression and all these wars, and it's like they had some legitimate things going on where they couldn't. We're blessed. Like, we live in an amazing time where we do have opportunity to learn about meditation easily, to just put on a YouTube, to access any amount of positive information, not just the negative news that's going on. So, I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's I'll just quote Wayne Dyer, who's one of my kind of top mentors. He says you can't give away what you don't have. So if you're trying to be of service, if you're trying to be generous with other people, if you're trying to be caring and kind, but you're not filled with that first, you are literally, you can't do it. You can't serve. You can't give. So don't do it for you. Like it's almost, it's hard. It is hard when you're like, I'm just going to 180 and start being selfish and taking care of myself and taking long walks and meditating and doing all these things to feel good. You're like, oh, I can't, I have my kids. I have my coworkers. I have clients. But if you just reframe it and say, it really is for them, it really mm-hmm. is. It's the only way that I could fully show up. Then you won't answer that email right away. You'll say it's not in their best interest for me to answer this email right now. I need to play with my kids. I need to go for a walk. I need to get some nature. I need to go to the gym for them so that when I respond to that email, it's coming from a place of feeling good, not like I got to get this out. And that is, it's a fundamental shift in how we live our lives, but it will change your entire life.
Man. Okay. So you mentioned like meditation. I think Headspace, I don't know if that's the one I just started doing. It's the one, Tim Ferriss has one that he endorses too. I don't know if it's Headspace, but anyways,
I love meditation. Tim, but I don't know who he endorses.
There's one he just, it's one of the guys he always has on. I don't know if it's Kevin Rose, but that went through like some super meditation, but it's an app and it's very, very methodical.
Is it Happier?
No, it's not Happier. I'll when I find it, I'll put it in the link, but also put Headspace, you know, in the description. But it's just, I don't know. It's like one of those, you know, I've tried like some of the longer guided meditations or whatever. And like, again, I think there's so many variations of it. It can be difficult, overwhelming, right? When someone says meditate, they think that you got to sit like Indian style, you know, in a dark room and put your hands up and om. But it's not that difficult, really. It could be as simple as putting on music. But I'd love for you to kind of explain like what you do for meditation, what people can do for meditation to start, and then as they go through it to make it work for them.
Well, meditation is simply the practice of focus, the practice of paying attention to something. Typically, it's the breath. And when you realize that you spend most of your time all day, every day practicing distraction, then you want that 3 minutes. I mean, that's all it is. Maybe 5 minutes. You don't need a long meditation. Consistency is much more important. If you did 3 or 5 minutes every morning, every day, instead of like an hour on a Sunday, it will have a much, much better impact on you. You're reprogramming your brain. And if you think about like, okay, most of the time I'm distracted, for 3 minutes a day, I'm going to practice focus, like focused attention. Then it's, you could look at it as training. Like you're just, it's like going to the gym for your brain. You're like, I'm training in focus, which is going to make me better at everything I do. It's going to help me with my kids. It's going to help me at my job. It's going to help with every aspect of life. And really, for me, it's mindfulness meditation. So you're literally just practicing being mindful, which just means being present in the moment, like noticing what you're doing in the moment, how your body feels, where, like what's going on around you. It's just, mm-hmm. again, it's just like focusing on the present moment. So you just take a couple deep breaths and you just start counting your breaths. And typically you count till 10. And then if you lose your, and you start back at one, you do that for a few minutes and then you lose your attention. Like it's just so natural. You're going to be like, when is this over? Has it been 5 minutes yet? What's for breakfast? I have a lot to do. I shouldn't be sitting here. This is stupid. This isn't doing anything. And every time you get distracted, it's like, oh, there my mind goes again. And then you bring it back to focusing on the breath or counting your breaths. And then maybe it's 30 seconds later. You're like, man, what's for breakfast again? And then it's like, no, I'm meditating, bring it back. And then it's like, oh man, I got a long to-do list. And you're like, wow, that happens a lot. And instead of beating yourself up, you're like, I'm starting to notice how distracted I am and how my mind just completely overruns my life. And then you start to crave it. You're like, man, I need this. It's like when you're at the gym, you're like, I can't lift a weight. You're like, oh, I kind of want to be stronger. When you realize how weak your focus is, you're like, I want to develop that because my mind is running the show and it's really unpleasant because our minds are just survival mechanisms that want to keep us busy and stuck in the status quo. Our minds are not our friends. It doesn't mean you can't have a relationship with your mind, but so often we are our minds. And you know how I said when I started meditating like that first week, I got a different perspective on my mind. It was like looking down at it and being like, oh my God, I am not my thoughts. Like that changed my life. And I don't have to keep thinking the same thoughts. And for me as a type A personality as well, I don't need to finish this thought. I don't need to like follow it through to the end because it takes you down this spiral. And it actually never ends because then you think of something else and then you think of something else. So you could just be like, wait, I'm doing it again. I'm doing it again. Take a deep breath. Okay, I'm back in my body. I'm back in the present moment. And you just let that thought go. And if anything throughout the day, you're like, oh, it's a negative thought. I'm talking shit to myself. We talk worse to ourselves than we would talk to our worst enemy.
Yeah.
So if you have that thought, like I'm stupid, I can't believe I did that, or I made a mistake, you're like, I'm doing it again. That's it. You just start noticing. And the awareness is the gift. And if you could not beat yourself up for having the awareness and actually see it as the pathway to enlightenment, the pathway to freedom, the pathway to peace, then you're just like, wow, like I can't believe how crazy my mind is. And then it starts to become like a joke. And you're like, I can't believe I used to just be run by my thoughts. And that's when life really starts to change. And it doesn't take a lot of time. It's not hard. Like five minutes a day, every morning, give it. If you did the Headspace, it's called Learning the Basics of Meditation. It's a 10-day pack. If you did that for 10 days, literally 3 minutes every morning, I really think you would feel something massively different. And it might not be like this huge epiphany, but it'll be something in your life. Like you drop the sauce while you're making one of your meals, like, you know, like a jar breaks on the floor and you just kind of like, you don't have that knee jerk reaction. You're like, okay, I'm going to clean it up. I mean, the first time that happened to me, I was like, oh my God, like I don't have to have knee jerk reactions anymore. I could decide how I want to respond throughout the day. I mean, think about that. Like, I just got chills thinking about that. You know, there's traffic and it's like you used to lose your mind. And now you're like, oh, I'm just going to put on a nice YouTube or listen to some music, or I'm going to call someone that I've been meaning to call. I'm going to open the windows and blast some like just have a good time. I'm going to make the most of this. I don't have to lose my shit just because for the last 30, 40, 50 years, that's how I've done it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And that goes to, I heard it, I don't know who said it, but it was no one can make you feel a certain way. Right. So if you get upset, it's you, right? It's not the person, even if they did something to piss you off, you still are the one that's getting pissed off because you said you wanted to get pissed off, not because they can't control your emotions. And that is a hard pill to swallow when you know, I got my kids, right? They do stuff and it'll drive you nuts. And I catch myself from time to time, even in that, to saying, you know, you stress me out. And it's like, well, no, you can't, like only I can stress myself out. Like my son's been sick for a couple of days and just the he spilled some water literally today, spilled some water. And I go, it's okay. Like normally I would just, why would you do that? You know, you shouldn't have the cup on the couch. Like this is ridiculous. Now I have to clean this. It was like, okay, let's get a towel and clean it up. Like
that's what, the best.
What is it? What is it going to matter? Do. Right. And he just kind of like gave me that look like, oh, I thought I was going to get yelled at because I spilled water and I don't want to tell daddy, but it can be difficult to practice, right? When life is going on to be present to do that. But I think, you know, the meditation will help you strengthen those mental muscles to be able to kind of do it on a more regular basis.
It gives you that gap. And that gap is where the magic happens. And it's a split second. It's like a millisecond where the water falls and you're like, all good. Like that little tiny second, that's what happens from meditation. You're developing that muscle. And it's also that where it's like, it's a hard pill to swallow that no one can impact how I feel in that moment. You could be like, you could just be interested. Like, why did that piss me off so much? why, you know, why did that person or that situation? And then you just become like the investigator in your life instead of trying to blame everyone or trying to get everything around you to be absolutely perfect so you can be at peace, which is a fucking miserable formula to try to follow. And then it becomes this, you're cultivating peace from within, and then you spread that with the world. And then all of a sudden you start to realize like the world actually feels more peaceful because I'm showing up differently. And you realize that those triggers are really teaching you. Triggers are teachers. Like that's it. So if something pissed you off, it's just like, what do I have to learn about myself from this?
So what are you seeing in kitchens, you know, to kind of tie it back into, because I could talk to this subject all day.
It's clearly so could I.
How do we tie it back into, again, the kitchens, or maybe your perspective of what you're seeing, like where kitchens were? I mean, I think I'm seeing it as I talk to people, and, you know, it just feels like there's an aura, because you never – I mean, again, it's not like I'm talking to all these restaurant owners, and they're like, oh, we've changed our perspective, or all these chefs, and things have just changed. It's like this overall aura of like – the industry is changing. There's more awareness to it. There's people that are advocates. What are you seeing the changes in these kitchens? How drastic has it been over, let's say, the past 10 years? I feel like in the past 10 years is really, or even maybe the past five, I think COVID kind of put things in perspective for a lot of people. But what are you seeing in the industry?
Well, it's like I said, I mean, just the fact that NAFM brought me to this panel, and Jasmine from Chow, which is Culinary Hospitality Outreach and Wellness, and her career was as a chef, and Tom Mitchell from the Burnt Chef Project, and Jason Waynes from Food Service Power Plant Network was moderating. The fact that shift is starting to happen, it gives everyone else permission at the highest levels. You know, if the executive director of NAFM says this is important, then you know, CEOs and presidents at these other companies and running big restaurant chains could start to say, all right, you know, I need to start paying attention to this, because at the end of the day, what's more important than treating your people right and creating a culture of care? And it's at the end of the day, too, it's also for your bottom line. Like if you want happy customers, you need happy employees. And if you want happy employees, you need happy managers and happy kitchen staff and everyone to kind of, and maybe it's not happy, it's just not pissed off, not stressed out, not burnt out all the time. So I think, you know, the trend that I'm starting to see, I don't want to say we have a long way to go, but it's conversations like this that surely help move the needle, is self-care, you know, self-hospitality, whatever you want to call it, self-responsibility, self-leadership, so that, and the team kind of comes into it too, where it's like, if you need a day off, it's not like you're going to be fired. First of all, you're not going to even be given shit for it. It's just like, we got your back. Like we understand we're all in it together. It's not about, and it's also not always about the customer's always right anymore. Like those times are gone where it's like, no, it's more important that we take care of our staff, because I'm going to see them tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And of course you want to take care of your customers, but if you really developed a culture where you're taking care of your staff first and foremost, and even you tell your customers that, it's like, we treat our people as the most important people in this entire building because they're serving you and we want you to have a good experience, and they'll get it. You know, they want joyful people serving them and cooking their food and not just rushing to get out of there and feeling like it's a nuisance. So yeah, I mean, I would love to see it go down to the, like the education level or the, you know, the training side of things. And I do think that's coming, but there are organizations out there that are growing, Burnt Chef, Chow, Food Service Power Plant Network. And I just think it's a trend that we need to just keep being a part of. You know, something I said on the panel at NAFM was, speaking to a room full of leaders, is if not now, when? Like really, like if 2 years from now at the next NAFM, nothing has changed, is the status quo okay? Are you going to be okay with that if nothing changes? So if not now, when? And if not you, who? Because anyone watching this, whether you think you're a leader or not, is a leader. You're a leader of at least of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're leading by example all the time. So the next person who comes is going to look to you, and the next new hire, the next person in the kitchen. So it's almost just at a certain point, you just have to be willing to care about yourself enough to make a change.
Yeah, no, what you said is it really resonates about self-leadership, and people learn and watch from what others do, right? If you're a good emulator, again, it happens with children, right? It's not what you say to them or try to teach. It's what you actually do on a regular basis. That's what they learn. That's what they pick up. And I think it's the same in the industry, is people watch, right? While we look at some people like, God, they're dumb. They're really smart. Right? People are smart. Like, that's just how we're wired. And they pick up on the subtleties of like, well, that's how a kitchen is supposed to work. Especially if you've never been in one, right? I didn't get in until I was 24. I didn't know how a kitchen was supposed to run. It's not like it was like a family thing and I grew up in it and I'm like, hey, this is what kitchens do. It was kind of like you got into it and I was like, oh my God, I got to watch all these dudes around me and see what they do on a day-to-day basis. And I got to do that because that's what you have to do, right? So you get indoctrinated into that. But to your point, if we can kind of flip the script and get some of that pre-badness out, then we can start to create good leaders in the kitchen. Even as a cook, you can emulate, and then that rubs off onto younger culinarians that are coming up into it to say, oh, that's how kitchens are ran. That's how things are supposed to happen. Respect, you know, in the right way, not throwing pots and pans and yelling and screaming, but respect in a way of, this is how we handle a situation when we mess up with the customer. And I totally agree. There's been times I've been in a dining room, and if the staff are like, we are super understaffed, we had six call-offs, whatever it was, I am a lot more empathetic to be like, I get it. I understand. Yeah. Now, again, maybe it's because I've been in the industry, but at the same time, I'm like, I get it. It's going to take longer for my food, but I'd rather them take the time to get it right than to rush it through, and then I get pissed off because it's not correct.
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, words don't teach. They really don't. So either you do it or you don't. And I know, you know, it seems like a lot of who you're impacting with your work is the younger generation, which is amazing. And it's not always easy to break that status quo, but if you can get buy-in from leadership, don't do it in the middle of a busy Friday night shift, that's for sure, but do it the next day or do it when you're kind of cleaning up. Just be like, hey, can we have a chat? Like, I really like, here's some things I'm seeing, or I'd like to be able to bring this in, or, it could just be like, I'm just working too much. Like, I want to be able to show up here, like, feeling really good. If you come at it from a place of honesty and just being like, I'm here, I want to serve, I want to do it the right way, you might be pleasantly surprised. And a lot of the leaders also haven't been trained. That's the problem, especially in this industry, is a lot of leaders either have just been there the longest, or, there was no one else to get promoted and to kind of fill in. And there's no like formal leadership training. And so they're kind of just winging it too, or doing it based on whatever they saw. But I think if you said, look, like, there's also some resources out there, reach out to Chow, reach out to the Burnt Chef Project, join the Food Service Power Plant Network, watch Mike's free masterclass, which is literally called Self-Hospitality. Like, and you could even just say, hey, let's do it as a team. Let's just sit down for an hour and watch this masterclass, or, you know, look at it like a workshop. Let's take some notes. Let's talk about it. That's how much easier can it be? It's like, let's just do it. Let's just do something to start turning the ship around, to move this fast moving train that's like barreling down the tracks. You just got to slow it down a little. You can't just reverse it immediately, but there's some entrenched patterns and programs, and you have to just start chipping away at them slowly.
Yeah. And so we've talked a lot about the mind and that, but I want to kind of turn attention to the body as well. I think that that's an important piece. I've found out a lot more as of late. You know, again, we're in kitchens, it's busy. You eat what you like. Everyone thinks that if you work in like fine dining restaurant, you eat like that on a regular basis. It's like, no, like frozen pizzas, corn dogs, chicken tender. It's a real thing, because when you're around it day, it's weird to say, but sometimes you're like, I don't want to eat that. I cook it all day long, or I'm around it all day. I don't want that. I want simplicity. But on the flip side, if you don't take care of your body, then that can also lead into poor habits, into just the same as alcohol, right? Like, what you put in your body is fuel. And if it's not the right fuel, then it's going to affect your performance. It's going to, then I think it's it's two things, right? The body, the mind, but they're the same. You know what I'm getting at? So you talked about things like, you know, maybe talk about what else can people do, right? You said walks, going out in nature. Like, what else can people do that's going to be good for both the mind and then the body? You know, when it comes to exercise, everyone thinks you got to exercise for an hour. You know, what from your experience can anyone, I mean, it doesn't have to be the food industry, but, you know, it's who we're talking to specifically. What can they do?
I mean, at the end of the day, it has to bring you joy. Like, that's it. It has to feel good to you. So if it's going to the gym, go to the gym. If it's playing tennis, going skiing, going for a walk, walking your dogs. I do think nature is like the ultimate healer. And in our society, we, you know, we tend to wake up in boxes, get into our box and drive, and then walk into our restaurant, which is a box. And it's like, you forget that there's, you know, trees and sky and birds singing. And so like that immediately, it just kind of regulates your nervous system. It gets you ready for a busy shift. Like, you really want to have your head in the game for those busy shifts too. So, make sure you're getting out in nature is like the biggest tip I can give. But aside from that, it's just do what feels good to you, really. And I will also say that walking your dog is meditative, but it's not meditation. So like, actually meditate every morning, use the Headspace app or reach out to me. Like, I love helping people with this and do that, but then walk your dog or go for a bike ride or go for a run. So there has to be kind of like a balance of kind of like training the mind, training the body, and cultivating that mind-body connection. But they are kind of two different things.
Yeah. What am I missing? What have we not touched on that I'm not thinking about? This is your space as far as like when it comes down to it, you know, I'm still on the journey. What are we missing? Is there anything we haven't touched on, you know, in this sector?
I just think it's worth reiterating that the path to peace and the path to bring more of this into your workplace is to care about how you feel. Like, that's like filling your own cup. That's what the word abundance means. It literally means overflow. So if you're feeling empty and depleted and burnt out and run down and you're grinding, then you have nothing to give. So it has to start with you. And yeah, that might mean waking up 15 minutes earlier, or maybe it's an hour if you want to get a workout in and you want to get a meditation in, or write in a gratitude journal for a few minutes. And you're like, I don't have time for that. But if you really look at it, you're like, all right, I'm not going to have that shift drink, or I'm going to hang out with my crew and have a water or something, or have the shift drink, but then don't go to the bar afterwards. Like, at a certain point, you have to just for you, but also for everyone in your life, not just the people you work with, but your family as well. You know, you have to kind of cultivate this. It's just a different way of being, where you care about yourself. You care about how you feel. At the end of the day, you take your first breath with yourself. You take your last breath with yourself. You need to actually kind of like who you are and like the life that you're living. And it starts with these simple practices. It's not just like go from like self-loathing to self-love. Like that's a pretty big gap, but you can go from self-loathing to 3 minutes of meditation and see what that does for you. You know, you can go for like, I talk shit to myself all the time. I'm worthless. I'm a piece of shit. I'm not going to amount to anything in life. To, well, what do I have to be grateful for? I could think of a few things. Like, you just take those little steps. And once you start feeling a little better, you're going to want more and more and more and more. And it's going to overflow into all aspects of your life and work as well. Because life is precious. A lot of what I talk about and help people realize is, you know, we are all going to die. And it's like, our lives are short and time is precious. And if you're living for tomorrow, or to keep it in the kitchen kind of realm, if you're living for the end of the shift, that's a huge chunk of every day that you're working that you're not really alive, like fully alive. Like, you're just trying to get through life, and that sucks. Like, that's really sad. And I know personally what that's like for years in corporate, for years front of house and a little bit back of house experience, but just being like, when's this shift over? Like, then I could have fun. Then I could do the things I want to do. It's like, there's no such thing as work-life balance. It's just life. It's just life, you know, and you want to enjoy it all. You know, it doesn't mean it's not stressful. It's going to be stressful. It's a stressful industry, whether you work in the kitchen or you work in corporate. It's stressful all around, but it's about how do you prepare yourself for that stress. I mean, I remember when I would be feeling great and going into a, like a busy Friday, Saturday night shift, I was like, bring it on. Like, let's go get three deep at the bar. Let me serve dinners. Like, let's go octopus arms. I'm going to be making drinks and ringing things up and listening to people. And I was on fire, but that comes from being ready, you know, being ready for it, which came from taking care of myself.
Yeah. It's, I just flashbacks to your point. Like when I was like super passionate and in the moment and I was present that Friday night, you get your ass kicked. But when you hit those 300-400 covers and everyone on the line's getting their ass kicked, when you're done, you're just like, God damn, that was amazing. Right. It was just that feeling of it sucked, but at the same time, it was amazing. And then somewhere down the line, then it turned into, you know, you start forgetting about doing it for yourself, why you got into it, why you're doing it in the first place. And when you can kind of, like to your point, self-realize that again, then the joy starts to come back. Like, this is why I got into it. You know, and maybe, go ahead.
No, that's a great point too, because, you know, when I was hitting my lowest point, which was after I quit corporate and I was bartending in Breckenridge, and that was literally like the lowest point of my life, I just thought my only option was to leave the industry. You know, if there was more of that, like introspection of like, why am I doing this? You know, are there other aspects of the job that I love? Like, could I move into a different role? Maybe there are some management positions. Maybe there's a different company that's a little bit more kind of has a caring culture. Then I wouldn't have just thought like, I'm done with bartending. I got to get out of this. So I think there's that, like, what's the point of it all too? It can't just be to make money. Like, it can't just be to survive, because then you're always just going to be surviving. And then you forget about the joy of whether it's you love cooking or you love the atmosphere or you love that energy or you love the pressure. And it sounds silly, but I call it mindful reminders. You know, and it could be anything from a bracelet you wear or an alert on your phone that's actually using technology for something really good. It could be a post-it note on the line, you know, just put something there that's like, I love this shit, you know, and because then you're like, ah, oh, this sucks. I can't wait till it's over. You're like, no, I love this shit. And it sounds silly, but again, our minds are not our friends, and they're going to trick us into feeling really bad most of the time if you don't have these things in your life. So whatever it is for you, it's like, this is why I'm doing it. And maybe right now it is the money and you're raising a family, but then put a picture of your kids up and be like, that's why I'm doing it. You know, I'm doing it for them instead of just pissing and moaning and complaining that it's a busy Friday night. It's like, of course it's a busy Friday night. You really want to work at a restaurant that's not busy on a Friday night? No.
Right. I think I've had too many, not Friday night, but you know, those during the day shifts, and you're just like, mind numbingly, I wish someone would just order some food so I could cook. I need to do something to stay busy.
That's right. That's right. And when you look at it like that, and it becomes kind of like a joke where it's like, am I ever going to be happy? I'm pissed off when it's slow. I'm pissed off when it's busy. And you have to realize like, okay, maybe it's not this, it's something in here that I haven't been taking care of.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, everything comes full circle back to the self, back to you. And you know, I can speak, if you chase money, you're gonna be chasing money your whole life. I can just be point blunt and blank. I've done it, climbed the ladder. Every time you get to another level, your lifestyle somehow magically creeps up right along with it, and you still don't have any more money than you did when you made $30,000 getting into it, or over $100,000. Everything just magic. It's amazing how the money just, it's like, oh, I still don't have any money. I need to make more. Versus, what do I have? Where am I at? And maybe I need to recalibrate my lifestyle. And then, you know, because there's tons of people making $80,000 that live crazy comfortable lifestyles because they live way below their means. And now money's not a stressor. you know, I know that's a factor for a lot of people is money. And they're like, I need more money because I can't pay this and I can't do that. It's like, well, do you really need that? Do you need to live in that house? Do you need that particular car? You know, I've come to peace in terms, you know, once cars paid off.
A car.
Well, see, you don't even have to worry about it.
Well, and I think that's a great point, Jeff. It's like there's actually a term called the hedonic treadmill. And if you just think of like a treadmill, it's like there have been studies that show that no matter what happens in our life, good or bad, we return to the baseline level of contentment that we've just been cultivating in our lives. So whether it's, you know, a new car or a new job, like I said, it might give you that flash of a thrill, but it's, you're going to drop right back down. So it really isn't about the next vacation or the next thing. And once you realize that, then if you start bringing more joy into your life every day, then you're right. Like, you don't need all those extra things because your life sucks and you're trying to make up for it on the weekends. Like, I need the boat. I need the vacation. I need all this stuff because I'm working so hard at a job that's just draining me. So I better make the most of my free time. And even that term, I hate it. Free time, that just implies that your work time is what? Bondage? I mean, it's not. You get to choose your own life. I wrote a whole piece today about, and I could share some, you know, how to contact me and read some of my writing. But I wrote a whole piece today on how so many humans live in cages that are unlocked.
That is a quote right there. Humans live in cages that are unlocked. That's powerful.
Yeah. You never just realize like you could walk right out the door, you know? So,
yeah. And I challenge people too. Like if time is the issue, you know, you hear a lot of people out of time is challenge yourself, do a time block schedule, look at your calendar, physically block out and put on a calendar on a piece of paper. Okay. I wake up.
This is
what
I do with my clients.
You know, from the time I wake up, you know, it takes me 30 minutes to shower and get dressed. Okay. After that, then what do you do? Okay. Now I go downstairs and eat and that's an hour. Okay. After that hour, then what is it? You drive to work and okay, that's 30 minutes and block out your entire day and actually look, take a self-evaluation of what your time is. And
I call it a schedule diary.
There you go.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed at how much time there actually is when you look at it on a physical piece of paper. Cause I'm just busy all day. I'm busy all day. And then you look at a piece of paper or calendar and you go, wow, there's like 3 hours a day that I'm really not doing anything or it's not productive or whatever, doom scrolling, TV watching, whatever
that's
it is.
That's it right there because you're practicing distraction and you don't even realize it. But if you cultivate more presence and focus and attention, then you realize it. You literally realize it. I typically spend Sundays tech free. You know, I turn my phone off. And it's amazing. As much as I practice presence and mindfulness, I still feel myself going for my phone. And I'm like, man, that's wild. Like, so you don't realize it until you become a little bit more present. And you're like, sometimes you could pick it up and just be like, no, I'm going to put it down. Or just a really easy tip that I tell people is move everything off your home screen that could be a distraction, especially social media apps. Just that one little act of I have to swipe one screen to get to it. You might be like, do I really need to open Instagram or TikTok right now? You're like, no, I'm just standing on a line or I'm outside. It's like, can I just look around? Can I just take a deep breath? Can I actually pay attention to who's talking to me instead of like checking my emails? That's one of the greatest gifts you can give anyone is your focused attention.
I also tell people, there's a way, obviously, on every phone now that like notifications, either turn them off or schedule them, right? I know for iPhone, I can schedule them blocks of every 5 hours or specific times of the day. And when those little alerts aren't coming up all day, it makes you less likely to want to grab it. And then even if you were to click on that phone, to your point, you put it down because you're like, oh, there's no alerts. There's no likes. There's no comments. It's just, oh, nothing happened. And you're less likely to want to have to open that screen, go into that app, check the notifications because that's extra work. If you think there's nothing there, you kind of are like, okay, well, I'll check it. And then all of a sudden you can then block out, you know, looking at all your notifications at one time versus
that's called batching, which is super helpful too. You could do that with dishes. You could do that with laundry. You could do that with checking emails. I mean, so many, I find it fascinating when people respond immediately to an email because then they're training me that they're always on. And now I'm going to expect them to do that. I make it a point to not respond to emails right away. I don't want anyone expecting me to be always on. So people mm-hmm. kind of get what you train them to expect. And I just think that that's a really powerful reminder to be like, well, what am I teaching this person about me? Is it, and it doesn't even matter if it's your boss. I mean, maybe if it's like a, you actually need to be on or you're on call for some reason, that's a different situation. But just in general, if you're like, oh, he's someone who doesn't, you know, he's not that responsive. He doesn't check his phone that often. Then that's what they're going to learn that. And it's like, hey, if you really need me, call me.
Right.
Like, just train people how to get through to you. Because if you really knew that every time you were distracted, here's another study, to get back to a place of focus or flow. I mean, talk about bartending and cooking, mm-hmm. like you get in that flow state. But if you get distracted, 23 minutes to get back. So if you're like, oh, who buzzed me? Oh, what's that alert? Then you're like, oh, I got to get back to whatever I was focused on. But you're not going to get right back to it. And then if your phone's blowing up all day, are you ever really focused on what you're doing?
Yeah, it's – again, I think that we could go a whole nother rabbit hole on just phones, social media, and everything else and what it's done to society. But, Mike, I know we're coming up on time. Give the listeners three solid – I know we've talked about a lot. Three solid tips, things they could do tomorrow. Like, listen, they listen to this, I clip it, and they watch it. What are those three things they can do tomorrow to start being more present?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said it enough, but you have to meditate. Like, it's one of the main things that I teach people. If you don't spend a few minutes a day, a few minutes out of 24 hours, not kind of being distracted by all the noise, it's a noisy, busy world. And coming to a place of just peace and silence and learning what that feels like, then everything else is going to be harder. So it just makes everything else easier. And, you know, on top of that, you can reduce your distractions, which the easiest one we just talked about is technology. You know, whether it's moving those apps off your home screen, being a little more kind of conscious about the alerts that you're allowing in, even what you're like, how quickly you're responding to things. Like, is that really a fire that I need to put out right now? You know, can that wait? And, you know, I know you like Tim Ferriss, and that's what he teaches too, is like, it's the batching concept of like, I'm just going to do all of that in one chunk. I'm going to be so much more productive, and then I could actually focus on something else. So meditation, reducing your technology and your distractions. And I would say, it's going to sound a little corny, especially if you've never done it, but practice gratitude. Like, really, you know, it's so, especially if you're dealing with some dark stuff, maybe you're dealing with depression or anxiety. If you just start to a little bit cultivate some appreciation in your life, if you think of the word appreciation, what we appreciate appreciates. You know, if gold appreciates, it goes up in value. So if you start to appreciate things in your life, it could just be the bed that you slept in, or who you're waking up to, or your children, or, you know, the fact that you turn a switch and light comes on or hot water starts running. Little things that we take for granted all the time. You're literally training your brain to look for more things and find more things to be grateful for. So then life becomes like this really beautiful experience of finding things to appreciate, but also noticing the silver lining in some of the quote unquote bad experiences too, like the traffic jam or like spilling something on the floor. It's like, all right, this is an opportunity to practice all that presence I've been doing. So yeah,
and if you want to see someone, practicing that gratitude, man, Gary Vaynerchuk, watch mm-hmm. his stuff. Just look up that in gratitude. He'll give it to you raw. I don't know how else to put it, but you want to talk about gratitude, that man will tell you point blank how it is. All right, Mike, how do people get a hold of you? You know, I'm hoping some people reach out. How do they find you, socials and whatnot?
So the best thing is take this masterclass. Like, if you enjoyed, you know, this conversation and what we talked about today, and you want to go deeper and learn a little bit more about meditation and practicing gratitude and filling your own cup, it's self-hospitality.com. That's it. It's free. It's really packed full of like amazing content that if you pay attention, give it an hour of your life, it's going to be worth it. It'll change your life. So the very first thing I would say is go to self-hospitality.com, watch that masterclass. As far as like connecting with me, it's always going to be at Mike Messeroff on almost any channel, any platform. My website's mikemesseroff.com. And then that's kind of just, I'm happy to talk to anyone. If anyone's struggling, it's never about like, hey, you should work with me. Like, that's not how it works. It's, if it feels like a fit, we'll talk about coaching or we'll talk about some of my programs, but I love talking about this stuff. And I really do know what it's like on both the corporate side and in the heat of the kind of the front lines of feeling really, really down and depressed and having a lot of anxiety. And it didn't take much. It just took the straw breaking the camel's back. And as we've already discussed, like, does it really have to get that bad? Maybe just watching this podcast is enough. It's like the wake up call of like, all right, something's got to change. If not now, when? And if not you, who?
I love it. And like I've always said, even if it's one person, if it reaches one person that makes a change, it was worth the conversation. You know, we're not trying to change the world. Yep.
Fred Rogers always said that. He says, you know, he's speaking to millions of kids and he says, I look at that camera and I just think of that one kid. That one kid who needs whatever I'm sharing today. Amazing.
Yeah, Mike, I am so appreciative of your time, of this conversation. I personally enjoyed it. I don't know if are listening. As much for me as it is for the listeners who listen to the podcast, I can't thank you enough. And I guarantee you, we have to talk more, you know, off camera, because what you do is just, it hits home for me. So I just want to say a big thank you for jumping on today and having this conversation.
It's my pleasure. It really is. Like, it's just what I love. It's changed my life. I love serving this industry and it's an honor to be here. So thanks for all you do as well, Jeff.
All right. And I'll link everything in the show notes, websites, all some of the really cool stuff, the apps, meditation that you can check out. That'll be in the notes or go to the website. I'll have it all there. So until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.